Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. I like to come back to the year 1968 a lot, and the reason I like to do that is particularly if you look at the consequences of the Prague Spring, the crushing of the Czech democracy movement, the consequences of that for the Soviet Union and for the rest of Eastern Europe in the long term are profound. The idea that Soviet communism has anything left to offer that could be progressive, not that it ever really did, but the European left, the European kind of Stalinist left that crumbles in 1956 following the crushing of the Budapest Uprising, finally kind of gives up the ghost in 68, and really it's the end of kind of Stalinism in Western Europe. In Eastern Europe, the results of 68 are quite profound. And what I want to talk today about is the reverberations of 1968 in Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia was never part of the Warsaw Pact. It was never part of the Soviet bloc. Tito would have been assassinated by Stalin had it not been for Stalin's death in 1953. There were plots there to get rid of him. Stalin hated Tito and viewed Yugoslavia as this kind of deviationist state that was a threat to Soviet communism, a threat to the authority of Soviet communism, and was far more likely to kind of veer back towards an alliance with Western capitalist powers. None of which is particularly true. Yugoslavia was far more an example of this sort of independent movement within post-war politics. But we're going to look today at what happens after 68. Anyway, looking at an excellent book by R.J. Crampton, Eastern Europe in the 20th Century. I do recommend it if it's still in print. Crampton writes, "The wave of demonstrations and street action which had characterised 1968 in both socialist and non-socialist societies did not leave Yugoslavia untouched. The social impact of the reform caused some disquiet. Students taking to the streets of Belgrade in May 1968 to demand more rather than less socialism. Tito, always by inclination a Leninist, intervened, showing considerable sympathy with many of the students' demands. In November 1968, there were further student protests, this time in Pristina, the chief city of Kosovo, and this time with nationalist rather than socialist demands. The University of Pristina was at this point still a satellite for the University of Belgrade, with teaching almost solely Serbo-Croat. The protesters demanded and were granted an independent Albanian language university. As inclusion in Hoxha's Albania was far from an attractive prospect, there was still no cause for secession from Yugoslavia, but there were demands for a separate Republic of Kosovo within the Federation." So automatically, even before we go any further, the unrest, the tensions unleashed by Soviet intervention in Czechoslovakia affect this multi-ethnic federation of nationalities that, as a result of the Paris Peace Conference, had come under the umbrella of the Kingdom of Yugoslavia and then the sort of the post-war Socialist Republic of Yugoslavia, which was predominantly a Serbian-led affair. You get not only radical students wanting a more comprehensive socialist society in which to live, but you also get waves of nationalism. And in some ways, the prevalence, the almost kind of impossibility of socialist states to stamp out nationalist ideas and nationalist sentiment, which is something that Benedict Anderson in Imagined Communities talks an awful lot about. And he makes the point in the first chapter that when you get, in the case of China and Vietnam in the late 1970s and early 1980s, China and Vietnam going to war against one another, he says, well, this idea of socialist internationalism trumping nationalist tendencies, this is what it's a nonsense, really. Nationalism is much, much more powerful as a motivator for human beings. But you get this occurring in this really kind of fissile country, which, as we see in the 1990s, when it breaks up with terrible, tragic consequences, these nationalist tensions are unleashed. So, the independent republic within the Federation for Kosovo doesn't happen. However, the Kosovo was allowed to become a socialist autonomous province, whatever that means really, of Serbia in 1968, and Kosovans were allowed to fly the Black Eagle, red flag of Albania. Obviously, Kosovars are mainly from have their kind of ethnic origins within Albania. Though obviously, that in itself is sort of an oversimplification. Kosovo was given much higher priority for investments. These concessions bought time, but no long-term solution. There were neither enough textbooks nor trained Albanian speakers for the new university, which therefore imported teaching materials from Albania. These included the writings of Enver Hoxha, who was the dictator of Albania, which insisted that at the end of the war, Tito had said that Kosovo should be included in Albania. The new University of Pristina also produced far more graduates than could be absorbed in Kosovo, and no other republic would employ Albanian speakers. The unemployed intelligentsia, so vital an element in the composition of extreme nationalist movements during the interwar years, had been recreated. So again, there are some really interesting nationalist and ethnic divides that are not just hidden beneath the surface in communist Yugoslavia, but there for all to see. And when you get the breakup of Yugoslavia into separate nationalist enclaves, it makes an awful lot more sense that these tensions were not hidden, but in the open throughout much of the life of the communist state in Yugoslavia. Crampton writes, in the late 1960s and early 1970s, however, it was not Kosovo, but Croatia, that nationalism seemed to pose the greatest threat to the Yugoslav state. The reform had made banks rather than the federal state the main source of investment funding, but the banks had not been decentralised, with the result that to Croats, the reform seemed to have increased rather than diminished Belgrade's control over the economy. This problem was exacerbated by the fact that the proportion of foreign currency earnings had to be transferred to the Federal Bank in Belgrade, and that Croats, with their flourishing Dalmatian tourist industry, resented this drain on their funds. Croatian economists argued that the Republic lost 45% of its revenue to central coffers. Whilst economists made these calculations, historians fueled old-fashioned cultural nationalism with monographs on Serbian domination of Yugoslavia in the years before 1939, or even in 1944. Such nationalism received a powerful boost from Matica Hrvatska. The long-established organisation was, by the 1960s, receiving support and money from newly founded branches amongst Croats working in the West, particularly in the Federal Republic of Germany, Sweden and Australia. Okay, so let's break that down. So the end of the Second World War, where Croatia had been allied with Germany and Serbia allied with the Western allies and the Soviet Union, had seen the defeat of Croatia and the destruction of its kind of the infrastructure of its fascist rule, and the incorporation of Croatia back into a Yugoslavia that the Germans had broken up during the Second World War, and the Croats and Serbs had both committed hideous crimes against one another, but for the most part it had been the Serbs that had been on the receiving end of Croat crimes. The fact that any sort of state was formed together as a result of following these wartime atrocities is really quite remarkable. My general sense is that the fear of the Soviet Union, the threat of the Soviet Union really brought together all sides under the leadership of Tito, who was a Leninist figure, but certainly a Yugoslav nationalist as well. However, once again, the resentments that fueled Croat nationalism, some well-founded, are there for all to see. And these flows of Croat wealth to the central bank in Belgrade, notionally to consolidate wealth in the hands of the state, and which distributes it on behalf of everybody. That this doesn't wash with most Croats, who say, well, no, this is our income that we've created because it's our beaches on the Dalmatian coastline and our industries and our resources that are particularly attractive. And, you know, if one has ever holidayed in on the Dalmatian coastline, it's very, very beautiful. But also the fact that the Yugoslavia was, you know, I would call a semi-porous communist state. There was tourism into it. People cross from everywhere from Italy into Yugoslavia all the time, and it was also a place where Soviet holidaymakers were able to go as well. So it's a kind of an interesting crossover within the context of the Cold War. But Croats quickly began to assert their sense of separateness, the sense that this is our state and our resources, and we don't receive from the whether we receive from the Yugoslav state or not, anything in return is neither here nor there. And so it's understandable that it was Croat nationalism that really begins the splintering of Yugoslavia under Franjo Tuđman, which we'll maybe talk about another time. Nationalism soon began to affect the Croatian party.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
With the appearance of the new dominant trio of Mika Tripalo, Savka, Dabčević, Kušar, and Pera Pekar. Who, if not necessarily liberals, were definitely decentralizers. So Croat nationalism sees political figures emerge who, again, it says, whilst not liberals, were decentralizers. Their job is to decentralize bureaucratic state power at the Belgrade level. For this reason, they took no action against the Zagreb student demonstrators of November 1971, who carried slogans such as end the retention quotas, stop the plunder of Croatia, and a separate seat for Croatia at the UN. They tacitly encourage this. They give it their blessing because this is in line with an overall sense of what they would like to achieve. I mean, what they were looking for at that point, and nothing becomes possible till the end of the Cold War anyway. Had Yugoslavia generally begun to crumble, you might have had intervention from the Soviet Union itself. They might have been opportunistically intervened or said, we need to do this in order to prevent the remnants of Yugoslavia from becoming Western satellites. You might have found a Soviet-backed Serbia and a Western-backed Croatia, something like that. So I could have seen that as being entirely possible. So there was no opportunity, no chance, no prospect of the breakup of Yugoslavia before the breakup of the Soviet Union anyway. But perhaps Croat decentralizers were looking for a looser federation, a much more dominion-like status for Croatia within a Yugoslav federation. There were no moves towards that kind of breakup. Signs of incipient separatism, plus the fact that nationalists inside the Croat Party were allowing non-communist nationalists to take prominent positions in social organisations and thereby threatening the leading role of the party, forced Tito into action. He called the Croat Party leaders, by party obviously we're talking about the Communist Party, he called the Croat Party leaders to a crisis conference on his island of Brioni, and when they appeared reluctant to impose discipline, he announced on the radio that the Croat leaders had lost control. 10 days later, on the 12th of December 1971, he used the threat of force to persuade the Croatian Central Committee to remove the three leaders. This was followed by the arrest of some 400 Croat nationalists and by Tito's resumption of control over the secret police. The Croatian Spring of 1971 was over. The Yugoslav emergency in 1971, the most serious since 1948, had ended all pretense of socialism making possible an evolution away from nationalism. It also discredited those reformers who had argued so strenuously that economic reform was essential to head off a recrudescence of old-fashioned nationalism. So there were socialist reform, economists and ministers who said, you know, unless we have either a socialism that works, or some sort of shift towards a more mixed economy. We're never going to advocate the kind of Western style capitalism, I don't think. Unless we have that, we will get nationalism or a variant of fascism. But it seems that economic reform would probably have done very little to deal with the effect of nationalism. Their idea as kind of materialists in this sort of a strict Marxist way of looking at things is once people's economic questions are answered, they don't tend to have any further questions about self and identity because they will identify as socialist citizens in this socialist economy that, you know, provides for them. But people aren't like that. You know, we human beings have that distinct tribalism within them. But the Marxist answer to that is, well, this is the kind of false consciousness that capitalism brings about. Apparently not. It had also shown that centralism remained strong in the party, even if it had weakened in the federal state. As the purges spread out from the Croatian to other Yugoslav parties, the liberals, as well as the local nationalists, found themselves the victims. The anti-liberal purges strengthened nationalism. A solid party member might easily accept the need for the dismissal of avowed nationalists, but the punishment of someone whose only mistake was to argue for economic decentralisation was less easily explained. To many, and especially to Serbian communists, this looked like federal interference in their own party's affairs. And what was worse, an interference which was precipitated by the misbehaviour of the Croats. Of course, Yugoslavia is a federal state, and whilst it's a federal one-party state, still local parties in Slovenia, in Yugoslavia, in Serbia, and in other parts, and Bosnia-Herzegovina and other places, would have reacted very angrily about the centralised federal state intervening, particularly if it's because of Croat nationalism. The response was to be more vigilant against any sign of such interference from the centre, and in turn this made local nationalism in the party and outside it more acceptable. And this, you know, the fact that Croat nationalists had been arrested and the Croat Spring had been crushed doesn't mean to say that nationalist traditions throughout the rest of Yugoslavia go away. Far from it. They are, you know, once the heat's died down and once the focus is off slightly the issue, parties carried on and nationalist organisations continued, nationalist traditions were observed, nationalist folk songs and events and social clubs and all that kind of thing, the kind of the infrastructure of nationalism across Yugoslavia, competing nationalisms from the different states in Yugoslavia or nations in Yugoslavia are allowed to quite easily continue. So the value of this sorry about today, the value of this, keep coughing, of understanding this, of looking at 1968 to 71, is that it helps to explain what happens basically 20 years later. It helps to give a bigger context to where this explosion of violent nationalism comes at least 20 years later, and the gradual decline of Eastern Europe's communist countries had given Yugoslavia's communist parties a sort of like a heads up, if you will. They had there was advance warning over the following 20 years of the kinds of nationalist struggles that would need to continue if you could, you know, and people were thinking very clearly about the breakup of Yugoslavia as a possibility. It was a very young state in their eyes. I mean, if we are here in the United Kingdom thinking very, very clearly about the breakup of the United Kingdom after 300 years, the possibilities of the breakup of Yugoslavia after 40 years is entirely possible, entirely more realistic. And over that period, throughout the 1980s, throughout the 1980s mainly, as it gradually emerged that Soviet communism and Marxist-Leninism in general was essentially over and close to collapse, nationalist alternatives are sought out, and those alternatives weren't just thought up within the space of a few months. They had been being prepared, and they'd had long-term activists working towards them for at least 25 years, if not longer. Anyway, I hope you found that useful, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Thanks, all the best. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.